Translation. When a person is fully engaged in devotional service, he is favored by the Lord, who bestows his causeless mercy. At such a time, the awakened devotee gives up all material activities and ritualistic performances mentioned in the Vedas. Purport. Very long purport. In the previous verse, those who are in knowledge have been described as unable to appreciate the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Similarly, this verse indicates that those who are followers of the Vedic rituals, as well as those who are followers of fruitive activities, are unable to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In these two verses, both the Garmis and Gyanis are described as unfit to understand him. As described by Srila Rupa Goswami, only when one is completely free from mental speculation and fruitive activity, anya vilashita shunyam jnana karmat janavartam, can one engage in pure devotional service without being polluted by material desires. The significant word atmabhavita indicates that the Lord is awakened in one's mind if one constantly thinks of him. A pure devotee is always thinking of the lotus feet of the Lord. Savayamana Krishna Padavindayo. A pure devotee cannot remain a moment without being absorbed in thoughts of the Personality of Godhead. This constant thinking of the Lord is described in Bhagavad Gita as Satata Yuktana, always engaging in the Lord's service. Bhajatam Priti Purvakam. This is devotional service in love and affection. Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead dictates to the pure devotee from within, the devotee is saved from all material activities. Even the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies are considered material activities, because by such activities, one is simply elevated to other planetary systems, the residential abodes of the demigods. Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Yanti Deva Vrata Deva, Pitrin Yanti Priti Vrata, Bhutani Yanti Bhuteja, Yanti Mad Yajino Prima. Those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods. Those who worship ghosts and spirits will take birth among such beings. Those who worship ancestors go to the ancestors, and those who worship me will live with me. The word atmabhavita also indicates that a devotee is always engaged in preaching to deliver conditioned souls. It is said of the six Goswamis, Nana Shastra Vichara Naikadipano, Satra Dharma Samstapako, Lokanam Hitakarino. A pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always thinking of how fallen conditioned souls can be delivered. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, influenced by the merciful devotee's attempt to deliver fallen souls, enlightens the people in general from within by his causeless mercy. If a devotee is blessed by another devotee, he becomes free from karma kanda and jnana kanda activities. As confirmed in Brahma Samhita, Vedeshu Durlabham, the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be realized through karma kanda and jnana kanda. Adurabham Atma Bhukta, the Lord is realized only by a sincere devotee. Om Jnana Chimanandasya, Jnananjana Shalabhya, Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Viladhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. In this purport, near the end of what I read, we see a very beautiful and transcendental and revealing description of how living entities are actually delivered from this world. We heard that atmabhavita, meaning always absorbed in the thoughts of the Lord awakened in one's mind because one is constantly thinking of him. We read that that term refers to how a devotee is always engaged in outreach to conditioned souls, always thinking of how they can be delivered. That meditation is always thinking of Krishna, manmana, bhava. constitutional proverb once described how everyone is looking for peace. The yogis are looking for peace. The karmis are looking for peace through sense gratification. Of course, the yogis want it through mystic powers, advanced materialism. The gyanis want it by giving up their identity and merging into the supreme. Everyone wants peace. But the devotees of Krishna are always peaceful. Why? Because they're always thinking of how to reach out to others to give them Krishna bhakti. Therefore, by that meditation, they're always peaceful. How is it that conditioned souls can be delivered from the depths of Maya? We have heard that a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always thinking of how fallen conditioned souls can be delivered. Then, step two, if you want to make it into a procedure, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, influenced by the merciful devotee's attempt to deliver fallen souls, enlightens the people in general from within by his boundless mercy. But sometimes we think, how will people ever become Krishna conscious? Prabhupada himself thought like that when he landed in the USA. By the devotee's constant meditation and efforts, then Krishna is influenced by the bhakti of the devotee. The attempt may seem to be so tiny. The attempt may seem to be futile. After all, Krishna bhaktas are, you could say, a drop in the bucket in the ocean of material existence. Nevertheless, step three, because the Lord is influenced by the outreach devotee's bhakti, then the Lord, as a super soul within the heart of the conditioned souls, enlightens them. Krishna reveals in Bhagavad Gita, out of compassion, I within the heart will dispel the darkness of ignorance with the shining lamp of knowledge. Often, newcomers to Krishna Bhakti, when they start chanting, they become disturbed by all the horrible things they begin to see within themselves. They thought they were pretty decent persons, done some things that they regret, but they're not as bad as most other people. Everyone thinks that about himself or herself. But then they start chanting, and they start seeing all these monsters lurking deep within the lagoon of the heart, the mind. What is this? Sometimes they even blame the chanting. I've got to stop chanting. Look what it's done. It's just made me so unpeaceful. It's just destabilizing. So they need association of devotees to understand that the chanting is doing its work. It's like agitator panels in a washing machine. It's shaking the dirt loose in the clothes. And because there's been no effort to clean in the deep lagoon of the heart and mind, that particular person thought, I'm okay. I'm even pious. But the chanting of Hare Krishna reveals the depths of ignorance. And that's Krishna's mercy. I often explain to such persons, seeing the enemy is half the way to victory. You never saw the enemy before. Therefore, you thought you were safe. Now, you've got your night vision goggles. By the grace of the Mahamantra, you can see clearly that you have severe problems. So continue to chant, increase your engagement in Krishna Bhakti, and you'll be victorious. So let us not forget this wonderful point about the process for outreach work. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, influenced by the merciful devotee's attempt to deliver the fallen souls, enlightens the people in general from within by his causeless mercy. Another time, Srila Prabhupada was explaining this same point in reference to particularly book distribution, that the devotee approaches someone with a book, and then the Lord in the heart, the super soul in the heart of the devotee, notices, you're trying so sincerely. You really want to please me. So then the Lord in the heart of the person that's being approached dictates to the person, you should take this book. You're being approached by a very sincere devotee. You should take it. So we see that devotional service is always performed in tandem with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whether we realize it or not. And that our attitude, our devotion, is noticed by Krishna and causes him, out of his causeless mercy, to enlighten the conditioned souls just by the attempt of the devotee. Sometimes we do things and it seems from the material point of view to be a complete failure. Yet, the Lord in the heart, Krishna Bhagavan himself, appreciates that selfless attempt and makes things happen. You've been hearing in the past few verses about demigod worship, and those points about demigod worship are culminating in this verse, which explains that the awakened devotee gives up all material activities and ritualistic performances mentioned in the Vedas. So demigod worship is mentioned in the Vedas. As you heard yesterday, the cultivation of Vedic knowledge is unlimited. I remember working on Prabhupada's books, BBT, and I asked Jayadvaita then a brahmachari. He was a senior. Why has Prabhupada mentioned so many times about demigod worship? Who in the West ever worships demigods? You ever heard about demigods? What was the point? I don't think I had been to India at that time, and our temples had a very tiny, tiny, tiny Indian congregation, even a place like Los Angeles. So I just couldn't see what's all the talk about demigod worship. Mayavadis, I can understand, because at that time in the USA, every day on Air India, a new god would fly in, land in New York and pick it up in LA. So I can understand Mayavadis, but why demigods? So I remember Jayadvaita telling me that, oh, in the future, we can see that in the West, demigod worship will catch on. And indeed, it's happening. Someone was telling me how in this, what's called North Rivers area, there's all kinds, there's kirtans going on all the time, and they're chanting names of demigods there. Who could have ever thought such a thing? Westerners chanting demigod names. So Prabhupada, he has the foresight to see what knowledge we need and how to apply it for making progress in helping others to reconnect with Krishna. Krishna's very difficult to understand. He says this himself. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna presents that he has an identity problem. He's not complaining, but he's stating the facts. You've got some who think, first I was impersonal, then I became personal. You've got others who think that I'm an ordinary person just because I have a form. They think my form is material. Neme vidu suragana kabhavam nam maharshaya. Aham adhya videvam maharshinam jasarvas. It's not simply the demons that don't know me, it's that even the demigods and the greatest sages, they don't understand me. Why? Krishna sort of concedes a point why they can't understand it. In every case, I precede them. I was here before them. They are recent. How it is that even the greatest demigods can't understand Krishna? This shows us the power of bhakti. With the power of bhakti, you can understand. A slight discrepancy in bhakti, you can understand. We can see that in Lord Brahma, Lord Indra. Brahma was a little perplexed by Krishna's childhood pastimes. He wasn't as bad as Indra. He's just perplexed. Could this really be my worshipful Lord? This little blue boy playing in the forest with calves and cowherd boys? Can that really be Krishna Bhagavan? Let me make a test. So he demonstrated, Brahma demonstrated how to be an empirical scientist. He thought, I'll meddle. But he didn't think he was meddling. He thought he would just do a laboratory procedure and merely take away the cowherd boys and calves and then see what happens. He thought it was a very innocent thing to do. He changed his mind in a split second. Oh, I don't think I should have done this. But his split second was 1 year of earth time. In a split second, he changes. You can see yourself sometimes, well, I think I should just eat a little more. No, I shouldn't do that. That's, Brahma changed his mind that quickly. But that his momentary decision to interfere in Krishna's pastimes, sort of, because he could not really interfere. That momentary decision set off whole Brahma the Mohana Leela, in which Lord Brahma was bewildered. Indra went a little further. He was actually angry. He was concerned that his share of the yajna performances, which were clearly stated in the Vedas, Indra should be satisfied if you want rain. Otherwise, you either get no rain or you get too much rain. So, as you know, Krishna convinced the Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd people, don't worship Indra. And Krishna meant he presented so much word judgment, which he himself, of course, didn't believe. But nevertheless, he convinced Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd people to worship Govardhan Hill instead. So everyone knows that, this new Govardhan. But you want to focus on Indra's reaction. He became very angry. He considered, due to his pride and prestige, he considered Krishna, at that moment, he's considering Krishna to be an ordinary person. He says that twice. Krishnam marcham upashritam. They have taken shelter of an ordinary person named Krishna. Twice he said that. That's his conception, due to being blinded. Now, the acharyas reveal that Krishna was purposely provoking Indra. That was his mercy to reduce Indra's false ego. So he purposely got in Indra's face, so to speak. No yajna for you. And that set off Indra in a rage. He made his famous summation of the situation. Vachalam balisham stabdham agyam panditamanim. This Krishna, he's vachalam, he's talkative, he's chattering so much. And what makes it worse, balisham, he's just a little boy, foolish little boy, and he's talking big, big words. Stubdum, arrogant he is for presenting so boldly to his senior, Nanda Maharaj, Upananda, the old other cowherd men, to stop my yajna. He didn't even respect his superiors. They tried to inform him and about the necessity of this Indra Puja, and he just overruled them. Stubdum, arrogant. Agyam, he's ignorant. He doesn't understand how the cosmos works. Panditaman, he thinks himself to be so learned. Krishna marcham upashrita. So he's influenced the whole cowherd village to take shelter of him, an ordinary person. Marcham. Gopame chakra apriyam. He's influenced all the gopas, the cowherd men, to act in a way that's unfavorable to me. Apriyam. Instead of priya, now it's apriya. They're all against me. They're all unfavorable to me because of Krishna. They took shelter of an ordinary person. He was blinded by Ishamana. But I am the controller. It's plain to be seen. If you can't see that I am the controller, it means one thing. It means you're blinded by opulence and prosperity. That is the situation in Vrindavan. They are blinded by their agricultural prosperity. So there's one solution. As Indra, then I can take it. Destroy The cows destroy their land by sending the clouds of annihilation. These clouds are meant to be released at the time of annihilating the whole cosmos. They can turn the whole Earth planet into one ocean. But I'm going to send those clouds to Vrindavan, to destroy their animals. Indra's in such a rage, he's thinking actually to kill cows. Well, they're all dependent. The cows, the human beings, are dependent on my giving rain. So they have neglected me. Basically, they have signed their own death warrant. This is how proud he became. And he accused everyone else of being proud and arrogant and overwhelmed by prosperity, which is actually his case. So, even Indra lost sight of the necessity of cow protection. In the Bhagavatam, it's explained in one purport that Namo Brahmanya Devaya, Krishna is the protector of the, he's the well-wisher of the cows and Brahmanas. Go over money to touch. But Prabhupada makes a statement in one particular section that actually Krishna likes the cows more than the Brahmanas. So Indra wants to wipe out the cows and in that way finish off Vrindavan's prosperity. This is how mad he became. Krishna responded based on two purposes. He wanted to, with his yoga maya, his internal potency, he wanted to reduce Indra's ego. He commented that demigods are supposed to be in sattva-gun, the mode of goodness. This Indra has become influenced by false ego and passion. He's deviating. He's acting out of normal. Therefore, I have to do something about it. That is mercy. Yashaham anigunami hadishye tattidam shanai. Whenever the Lord sees a devotee becoming proud, if he's merciful to that devotee, he reduces the pride. That's special mercy. Hari, who takes away all the impediments to pure bhakti and then gives the ecstatic jewel of love of Krishna. You might think you see that in Krishna's Madhurya Leela, when twice Krishna showed that he detected pride and left the arena, left the Rasamandala. He left the enclave of the Rasalila. The first time, the gopis were thinking, because first Krishna told them, go home, and they were shattered. The more submissive gopis spoke very sweetly. The unsubmissive ones let their anger be known. So then they didn't go, and the rasa dance began. But the acharya say Krishna detected some pride. He left. And he left with his dearest consort. Evidently, he also left her because of pride. When the other gopis came upon Srimati Radharani, she explained to them how she acted proudly with Krishna. But that's her supreme transcendental nature as Krishna's dearmost consort, to sometimes be rebellious or unsubmissive. Anyway, she said to Krishna, just put me on your shoulder, take me wherever you like. And Krishna said yes, and then he disappeared. So sometimes devotees wonder, we have instances of pride in these most beloved devotees of Krishna. Actually, it's not. There's nothing in those leelas that resemble are anything like our material emotions in terms of the material contamination. They're like our material emotions, and then again, they're unlike our material emotions. So the pride was just a stimulus for Krishna's pastimes. Actually, the acharyas reveal the gopis were proud of Krishna. They were not proud of themselves. But it appears like that, just like their love for Krishna appears like lust. But as their hankering for Krishna has nothing to do with the material energy. Similarly, their pride has nothing to do with the material energy. They're not full of themselves or how great are we that Krishna is with us. They're actually taking pride in Krishna, and they're taking pride in service to Krishna. Indra's pride at something else. And therefore, Krishna commented. He's a demigod. He's supposed to be in Sattva-gun, the highest level of material existence. He's deviated from that. I have to do something about it. I'll give him that mercy. But simultaneously, Krishna wanted to bring the Vrijvasis even closer to him. So he did that apparently through a disaster, because Indra did cause an environmental disaster. So Krishna is thinking that by this, the bond will become tighter. When Indra sent his Sambartika clouds and they were inundating Vrindavan, the cows were so miserable, they hung their own heads, trying to put their heads under their body to shield their head and put their calves under their body. In this situation, everyone turned to Krishna, please save us. It's not actually material distress that they're feeling in any way. It looks like material distress, but there are no material feelings in Vrindavan. They are feeling pure spiritual feelings of dependency on Krishna. Through that so-called distress, they became even more attached to Krishna, and that's what Krishna wanted. So through this pastime of lifting Govardhan Hill, he dealt with Indra's pride, and he dealt with bringing the residents of Vrindavan closer to him. Remember Indra's accusation that Krishna doesn't understand the cosmic manifestation. He's inexperienced. This is how covered Indra had become later, after Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill. Indra came to offer prayers. And being the supreme leadership expert, Krishna knew Indra's false ego was pretty big, even though he's my servant. I don't want to humiliate him in public. So Krishna purposely arranged that he was wandering in a solitary area near what is Govinda Kund now, the base of Govardhan, so that Indra could approach him in solitude and not be embarrassed in public. I think it was Tamal Krishna Maharaj who told me that when it's time to chastise his big leaders, Prabhupada would always do it in private. He would dress them down in public. I remember once there was a big problem perceived in this time in 1977. That Back to Godhead was, in the eyes of many, it had gone off and it had become new agey and wasn't Krishna-centric anymore. And so it was a raging controversy. The devotees who were doing it, they were saying, no, we're trying to broaden the scope and we're just making things more accessible for people. And many devotees were feeling, no, you've lost the plot, you've lost the potency. So it was a big controversy. The BBG trustee, he was behind it. He thought, no, this is the way to go. So I remember he once, during the morning announcements after Mangalarti, he was reading the 10 offenses and don't blaspheme Vedic literature. And he right in the reading announcement, aha! No criticism against Back to Godhead magazine. Like 300 devotees there. Just see! It's an offense. So anyway, the situation finally, it already reached Prabhupada, and it just increased in intensity. So finally Prabhupada said, look, I've been hearing so much about this, what's going on? So he called the BBT trustee in private, and the only way we know what's going on is because Jayadeva Maharaj, Brahmacharya then, he was very much concerned, and he was part of the BBT. He went and put his ear to Prabhupada's door at the keyhole. So he heard the whole thing. So I just arrived in Mayapur, and all of a sudden I see this pinkish-orange cloud floating through the air. It was just Jayadeva Maharaj, Brahmacharya, floating through the air in ecstasy, you know, 5 meters off the ground practically. I heard it all. Prabhupada fixed it all. Prabhupada. What happened? So he told me. I put my ear to the keyhole and I heard. Prabhupada really gave it to him. Prabhupada told him, don't water things down. That's not necessary. And then Prabhupada changed the editor of Bhaktivedanta. So it's significant. We would never have known, but Prabhupada took him in private and just chastised him, but didn't do it in public. So Krishna did that with Indra. Krishna arranged, I'll just be walking in the Govinda Kund area, there's no one around, and then Indra saw his opportunity, and he came and put his head at Krishna's feet, and he presented himself as, you have every right to punish me, but you shouldn't punish me because I'm like a child, you're the father, spiritual master, disciple, father, son. You have every right to punish me, but please don't punish me. It was very expert. So, we may think what relevance do verses and purports about demigod worship, what relevance they have in the West. Now, of course, with a huge Indian congregation we see, it's very relevant for that. But even now in the West, just like they caught on to Mayavad, now they caught on to demigod worship. You have people going around, Om Namo Shivaya, you've got Durga worshippers in the West. We don't know the foresight Srila Prabhupada has in his books, how he tailored his books for giving information that's relevant for thousands of years into the future. We can't see that far. And so we have to acknowledge, indeed, Krishna's words about himself. People have a difficult time understanding his pastimes. They apply their mundane conceptions. Remember, Indra twice, Krishna Marcham Ubhashram. They've taken shelter of an ordinary person named Krishna. The Acharyas point out that actually Indra's words have a double meaning. By the grace of Mother Saraswati, when he calls Krishna Vachalam, talkative, he actually means you only speak according to Vedic injunctions, Vedic knowledge. Balijam, when he says you're a foolish child, he actually means you have the lack of pretension, just like a child. Stubdum, arrogant? No, it means there's no one for you to bow down to. You're everyone superior. Agyam, ignorant, means there's nothing for you to know. You're omniscient. Panditamanina, you are thinking yourself to be wise? No, the actual meaning is that the greatest scholars and sages try to understand you. Krishna, you're the supreme absolute truth. Marcham, you're not ordinary. No, it's that your pastimes look ordinary out of your mercy to allow attraction for conditioned souls. They can recognize human elements in your pastimes. And in that way, your naralila, your human-like pastimes, are a form of mercy. They seem ordinary, but they're not. But Krishna is mostly concerned with the residents of Vrindavan. And he explained that. They have given everything to me. I'm their life. They're my friends, my lovers, my parents. And most of all, they're my home people. Upashrita means not simply that they have given Krishna shelter in Vrindavan, but they're his home folk, and Vrindavan is his home. Therefore, Krishna wanted to do something about it. Indra misunderstood very greatly. He explained to Krishna, I thought you were trying to take my share of the yajna. It's hard for us to understand that mentality. But that's the danger when you have a lot of power. He misread Krishna and started seeing him as a completely ordinary person. We need to be aware of that tendency. Interesting example I saw when I was landing in Brisbane. They turn off, you have to turn off all your electric instruments, you know, no computers, no iPads, so I couldn't read. But they do, Air New Zealand leaves on the entertainment screen, so they have documentaries. So just for 10 minutes before landing, I put on a documentary, because I couldn't read Bhagavatam anymore. So it was a documentary about Aboriginals in Western Australia who, as late as 1964, had never seen anything of modern civilization and had never seen white persons before. They're in the middle of Western Australia and running around just, you know, mothers and kids. The men had died or run off. They're just mothers and kids, just totally naked, living in the desert, hunting in the desert. So there, Australia had done a rocket test and landed a rocket somewhere out in Western Australia in the middle of nowhere. And so some scientists were driving there to see the rocket. And so these group of Aboriginals who had never seen anything of modern civilization, never seen another person outside their group, they saw this Jeep driving up. And so the documentary presents the Aboriginals, they're describing their reaction. They gathered their children. The rocks are moving. That's the Jeep. The rocks are moving. That's the only way they can understand it. That big rocks have started to move across the desert. Those are the Jeeps. And then as the scientists got out of the Jeeps, they were wearing these big wide-brimmed, you know, Aussie hats. And so the Aboriginals said, they couldn't see the complexion yet, or the full impact of the complexion hadn't hit them, but they just thought, they have dishes on their head. And then as they could see through the sun and see the complexion of the scientists, they had never seen white persons before, they were shocked. The first thing they thought was, cannibals! Why cannibals? Their skin has become white by eating bones. So they were just applying their conceptions. So anyway, in the documentary, they asked the Aboriginals, well, how do you feel now? Because, you know, and they said, well, we like wearing clothes. We're attached to wearing clothes now. We don't want to go back to the old way. So anyway, it shows you a perfect example of how you have no other recourse than to apply your material conceptions, devoid of any higher knowledge. So they made logical deductions. The rocks are moving. Those are Jeeps. Men with plates on their head, the vibrant hats, and they're white. They must be cannibals. Skins become white because they eat bones. In this way we can understand Krishna's point in Bhagavad Gita. Avajanati mamudha, fools deride me as an ordinary human being. They don't know my supreme nature, my transcendental dominion over everything. Oh, Lord,